Portions of this program
the
may
following
be pre-recorded.
Program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the host and the guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Let's see, got a Facebook post here, I guess, that Michael Butler, he says, thank you for all your Democrat friends starting a war or something. I'm not sure what that means, Mike. I don't really get into that. But I am going to tell you, I'm going to read you Amanda Chase. She's running for governor. Her post, more bad news for the law-abiding gun owners regarding red flag laws. If the measures pass, a person would not be charged with a crime or even accused of one for their gun to be taken away. They would then be granted a hearing within 14 days of having their firearm seized to determine whether they will get it back or lose it for a longer period of time. So that appears heading out of the House today. Again, as far as my Democratic friends, I'm friends with a lot of people. I believe in friendships. And I don't let ideological positions stand in the way of myself and my friends. Now, you can choose, Michael, to live your life your way. And I'll choose to live my life my way. And I just don't let this stuff get in the way of friendships I have, because I believe in relationships and I believe in friends. And I have many friends on the other side of the aisle. And many of them I have on my show. Doesn't mean I'm going to vote for them. Doesn't mean I agree with them. Doesn't mean I endorse them. Doesn't mean I support their policy. But it does mean that many of them are my friends, that they're good people, and I have a relationship with them and their family. And I'll live my life, Michael, my way, and you live your life your way, and perhaps in the middle the twain shall meet. Now, as far as getting Democrats, Michael, on my show, don't tune me in. Listen to Hannity, who will go to RNC.com, and he will read you their talking points for 3 hours and bring you the echo chamber. That's a different style. That might be more to your liking. And you can do that or tune somebody else in the morning that, I don't know, InfoWars or some gibberish like that. But I get Democrats on my show and people that I don't agree with so I can understand their point of view. You cannot deal with the other side, cope with them, or understand them if you do not talk to them and have a conversation. And see, Michael, the problem in this world, in my judgment, is the lack of conversation. You have to have a convo. And you might argue whatever, but you've got to communicate. And I want to know what the Democrats are thinking. Because if I don't, how can I possibly figure out how to defeat their views if I don't understand what they're thinking and what their supporters are thinking? That's why I go to Iowa and I go to New Hampshire and I go to Bernie things and I go to Pete things and Amy things and all the town halls, and we get people on our bus and we bust our ass, if you will, to get out there instead of sitting in our comfy studio. You know how easy it is to sit in your studio, Michael, and drink coffee and have hot chocolate and have a staff bring you donuts and read the paper like McCraney does in Norfolk, or like John does in Richmond, or Hewitt does in Washington? You know how easy that is to have a coach there and they feed you the news and you read the talking points of the day? That is the easiest job you can possibly have. You basically read stuff. You know how tough it is to take your equipment, get on a plane, get on a bus, go in the cold, drive to events, find people supporting the other candidates, get them on the bus, interview them live. You know how tough that is? Drag all your equipment around the country. Why do I do it? So that I can talk to Democrats, so that I can talk to Bernie supporters, Amy supporters, Pete supporters, Bloomberg supporters. That's why when you tune me in, I have the best analysis in America. But if you don't get up off your butt and do that, and you simply read the talking points of Todd Gilbert, nice guy, or the RNC, where does that get you? It's the lazy man's way to do this job. And look, go to WRVA, 1140 AM, tune him in, or go to McCraney, and they're reading in the paper. And maybe that's a better option. Certainly, Democrats aren't going to come on their show to annoy you. I have them on my show, as I'm having two on today, to understand their perspective. Having said that, Danny Barefoot, longtime Democrat operative, Elizabeth Warren supporter coming up, and then Ben Tribbett at 8:30, another Democrat consultant. So you can go to another station and they can read you the Richmond Times-Dispatch, the Virginian Pilot, and download the talking points. Or you can stay with me, John Fredericks, Radio Network, Trucking the Truth. John Fredericks, Radio Network. Joining us now, Congressman, 1st District, Republican, Rob Whitman. Congressman, great to have you, sir.
Good morning, John. Great to be back with you.
You're going to be running against Bernie Sanders. What do you think?
Well, I tell you, a lot of interesting things are unfolding. Bernie certainly has the momentum in this. As you've said, it'll be interesting to see what happens in South Carolina and Super Tuesday, but certainly, you know, the trends are moving in that direction. And John, I couldn't agree with you more that you cannot underestimate Bernie Sanders. There's a following behind him. The people that are behind him are extraordinarily passionate. I think it's different for him than it is any of the other Democrat candidates. And we as Republicans cannot in any way, shape, or form underestimate that, because you know, the passionate people have behind Bernie Sanders, while we may adamantly disagree with him, is real. And it is something that can affect elections. So we better be on our toes, because it's going to take everything that we have to make sure that we prevail in this next election cycle. But certainly Bernie has the momentum behind him, and it should be a wake-up call to all of us.
It's got to be a wake-up call. Because when you listen to a speech Saturday night, and I really follow this stuff, Congressman, as you know, and he said, we have put together a multi-generational, multicultural coalition. And then on the heels of that, he calls for free pre-K childcare 2 to 5, making it like kindergarten, right? You go to public school, 5 years old, you go to kindergarten, right? It's free. He wants to make it 2 to 5, right? All pre-K is free, part of the public education network. A lot of these things to people sound good. Like, yeah, I mean, I got to work. I got to pay child care. I'll just drop them off. And that's like going to kindergarten or the first grade, right? Same thing. He says that that was in the next breath. Guy's got, I mean, he's got a following. And I just told the Democratic consultant Danny Barefoot a few moments ago, the reason I'm not complacent here is because this was what the Trump supporters did. And as you know, Rob, I was one of them at the beginning, mm-hmm. that we had a movement. And I knew we were going to win in 2015 before we came down the escalator and after the thing started, because we had a movement. We had the enthusiasm. No one else had that. Rubio, Bush, whatever. They were politicians. We had a movement. And many of us were willing, that were with the Trump campaign at the beginning, ready and willing to burn the party to the ground because we couldn't stand it. So that's where the Democrats are now. That's why he's tough to beat, because they don't care. The Bernie supporters don't care what happens to the DNC. If they got to burn it down, fine. That's tough. That's tough to beat. That's why I think he's going to be the nominee.
Yeah, I agree, John. There's a whole energy that exists behind that, an energy, this idea to shake things up, that the status quo, for a variety of reasons, isn't working. And that is, as you point out, that's a powerful force within either party. And we saw what it did for President Trump. And listen, the same dynamics exist with people's dissatisfaction with the status quo for Bernie Sanders. So you're right. It's not to be underestimated. And you know, I think it's something to be reckoned with in their primary system, and also in the general election. As much as, you know, we adamantly disagree with the with the whole concept of socialism, whether he calls it democratic socialism or not. It's socialism. It is a populist ideology that he is able to capture people's imagination with. And they say, hey, listen, the things I struggle with, you know, the cost of health care, the ever-increasing cost of health care, hey, if it's free, then that's not an issue for me.
Right.
The cost of student debt, hey, if all my student debt is forgiven, it takes that off my plate. And that's going to be something that he can use to compete against the economy
that
we have right now, which is an extraordinarily great economy that Donald Trump has been the architect of with his policies and with tax codes. That's a big thing to overcome. It is too a challenge to get people to think past that and say, hey, mm-hmm. by the way, it's great to promise all these free things, but the bill to pay that is in the, you know, the tens of trillions of dollars. You know, how do we sustain that? For a lot
right.
of people, listen, they don't care. And when they hear, hey, you can pay for it by taxing the rich, they're like, hey, that's great. But, you know, the math on that doesn't work out. But to be able to get people to look past this very captivating populist proposal, to look past that and say, hey, how does it all work? Is not something necessarily that people dig down and think about. It's really captivating to say, hey, all these things that you worry about now are going to be free. That's a tough thing to counter.
Congressman Rob Whitman, you're so right. That's why you can't be complacent. You can't take this thing for granted. And we're going to see what plays out, no doubt. You're on the John Fredericks Radio Network. We are with Republican Congressman Rob Whitman, 1st District. That's in the Central Virginia area, the Northern Neck, and through Fredericksburg and Stanton. It's good to have him on again. Okay, so now we're mired in this campaign. So what are we doing legislatively? When you look at your calendar, tell me about something productive that's going to get done in Congress between now and, let's say, the summer, right, when everybody leaves again. What are you guys going to get done?
Well, John, there's some things that we have to get done. Obviously, a budget, and I'm not sure what is in the offing for getting a budget done, but that has to be done, and it has to be done, I think, before April 15th. We're going to be doing the National Defense Authorization Act, which, again, has to get done. Listen, there's some other things that must get done, too. The problem is that things are in such a partisan realm, it will make it very, very difficult. Things like, you know, a solution to bring down the cost of prescription drugs. There's a great bipartisan bill there if the Speaker would just bring it up. Unfortunately, the bill that's passed out of the House, you know, is a partisan bill that I think has no chance in the Senate and passed on almost strictly partisan lines in the House. So there are things that have to get done. You know, unfortunately, you know, the whole aftermath of the impeachment makes it much, much more difficult. I think the American people, though, John, are very frustrated. They look at it and go, you know, we are tired of the constant procession of partisanship and the back and forth there that is all about, you know, going after the president and not about doing the nation's business. I've been in the district the last week, and almost to a person, they've said, Rob, you know, we just wish people up there would set all this other a division aside and actually start to work on behalf of the American people. That's what people expect. That's what we need to do. Certainly what we've gone through with this impeachment, it makes it very difficult, but it's incumbent upon members of Congress to set aside those differences and to get things done. I am, you know, the eternal optimist. Some people will say too optimistic, but I think there is the need to get the work of the nation done, and just the basic elements, John, the finances of the nation. Let's address things like the debt and the deficit. Let's get our national defense done. Let's do something about the cost of health care. Those things we can do, and we must do.
All right, where are we, Congressman Whitman, right now? Where are we with prescription drugs? I mean, there's a couple of competing bills. I know Pelosi's got one that she favors, which it's got a couple poison pills in it, but basically it's government price fixing. Where are we with prescription drugs, and where is Rob Whitman?
Well, you're right. The bill that passed out is a government command and control approach, which I don't believe in any way, shape, or form will be successful in keeping the cost of prescription drugs down. And I don't think that goes anywhere in the Senate. We actually have a number of bills, ones that I am co-sponsors of, that use free market mechanisms and transparency to help bring the cost of drugs down. Those bills that passed in a bipartisan basis out of the Energy and Commerce Committee, you know, we have urged the Speaker to bring those bills to the floor. And again, it should be an easy process, John. These things passed out of the Energy and Commerce Committee on a bipartisan vote. Why can't we bring those bills to the floor? And again, things that are just common sense efforts to be able to bring down the cost of prescription drugs, and where you empower the consumer and not the pharmaceutical companies, and where you take the ability of these pharmacy benefit managers, these PBMs, which are essentially middlemen that do nothing but take dollars from these small independent pharmacies and even sometimes from patients, and don't create any efficiencies in the system. That's a real problem. So to be able to address that, to make sure that people can understand, how do I make a good decision that actually gets the pharmaceutical that I need for the best price possible? How do we encourage those things? How do we make sure that we put the power back in the hands of the consumer? Those are the bills that are out there that need to pass, that need to go to the president's desk so we can get our arms around this issue.
All right, well, that thing's dead in the water, because what she passed, McConnell isn't going to forward. He doesn't want price fixing, so that just dies on the vine. I've still got hope that we pass something to stop surprise medical billing. We're now far along the line. There's competing bills. Nothing so far has been passed. What bill do you favor, and what bill can we get bipartisan backing on so that it actually can become that McConnell will actually forward it, because the prescription drug thing's dead in the water. It gets to the Senate, goes in his desk, and that's the end of it. It can't pass anyway. So this is the thing that the Democrats do. They pass bills for politics, all right? She passes that prescription drug bill with a full knowledge it's going nowhere, so they can simply say they passed one. When are we going to get something done? So let's go to surprise billing. Is there a bill on the floor that Rob Whitman can back that actually has a chance to become law?
Yeah, there is, John. I think that there's you know, ways for us to be able to address surprise medical billing. And, you know, surprise medical billing has really hammered people. You know, and here's the situation. When you go to the hospital, you are going to be billed by the hospital and billed by the doctors. So you get these statements from the hospital, and then you get the statement from your insurance company, and you look at that and you go, okay, things look okay. And the insurance company says, oh, we're going to send the bill to the hospital, whatever we have in a non-disclosed agreement with the hospital as to how much they'll pay. They go through all those machinations, and then months later you get this bill and you go, what the heck? You know, now they're billing you for thousands of dollars, things they say that the insurance company doesn't cover. And you are then struggling with it. And for many folks, you know, it's thousands of dollars. They can't afford that. And they end up back in medical bankruptcy. You know, what I want to make sure is that they have the legal standing instead of, you know, benchmarking, you know, what billing should be, is to actually have the ability for them to be able to say, no, I'm going to have arbitration. I want to get a clear understanding about what the insurance company pays for, what I am legally allowed under my insurance policy, and then what the hospital or the doctor is billing. And right. is that fair, and have the ability to arbitrate that in order to make, you know, a transparent settlement of that, not to say, well, you know, Here's what the cost is, and here's what the negotiated rate is with the hospital. That's it. So be it. I want there to be an independent dispute resolution, where you are able to get a negotiation with the provider and the insurer and you can choose between the two, and you get a settlement that's best for you. I mean, that's how it should be. That's what I believe should happen. Not to have, again, a top-down command and control government based solution to this problem.
Exactly. Congressman Rob Whitman, Thanks for being with us. This is the John Frederick Show. I want to get to foreign policy. Richard Grenell becomes Director of Defense National Intelligence, DNI, was ambassador to Germany. You're the subcommittee ranking member of the Sea Power Committee. Obviously, Director Grenell will be involved in that. What did you think of that move?
Well, listen, Ambassador Grenell is a straightforward, no-nonsense individual. He's going to be the interim. It'll be interesting to see who the president decides to nominate in the long term. But we need somebody in the Defense National Intelligence Agency to really get after things. I mean, there's a lot of things going on, a lot of information that needs to come to Congress to make sure we fully understand what the threat scenarios are out there. And you need somebody that's going to come in and be no nonsense and be straightforward about the incredible importance of this job. And I think the president has selected Ambassador Grenell as the interim because he believes in his no nonsense approach.
You've obviously dealt with him. What do you think of him?
Listen, he's direct. He's straightforward. He's no nonsense. And the good thing about him is you know exactly where you stand with him, which I think is what people expect in government today. Now, listen, there may be disagreements on things, but I just want to be able to deal with somebody straightforward and have them say, hey, listen, here's the information. Here's what is going on. Here's what we believe is the best direction going forward. And then ultimately, you know, if it involves the deployment of resources, that is revenues or appropriations, or if it involves policy decisions, you know, Congress ultimately has the decision. So, you know, we will play our role under Article 1, and the executive branch plays their role. But to have somebody that's no-nonsense and straightforward, and that's what I have found with Ambassador Grenell, is what you want out of that. Now, listen, he may say things that you disagree with, but that's part of the discussion, John, that we have to have and that people expect us to have in our interaction with the executive branch. That, I think, provides a good, healthy discourse on things and making sure that we get the work of the nation done.
All right. Well, I think he's a fine choice. I love his attitude and his spunk and his spirit, and I thought he's a fabulous ambassador, certainly a supporter of the president's agenda. And look, Congressman Whitman, I know there's a purge going on, and the never-Trumpers are getting found out and tossed out of the administration. I've been calling for this for 2 years. I think mm-hmm. that the number of people that have surrounded the president that don't like him, don't agree with him, want nothing to do with his America First agenda, want their Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush back. They want Dick Cheney back. They want neocons back. They want to go back to the way it was. I mean, they have been surrounding this administration. You might not agree with me. That's fine. But I've been a proponent of getting them out of there. And to me, it's not a moment too soon. Hopefully, we can go into this re-election campaign where the president has a team that actually believes in his policies. That would certainly be a breath of fresh air for me. No question,
John,
about it, Congressman.
It certainly will. And we know Ambassador Grenell is straightforward and, as you said, you know, has a very definitive line on what he sees as the issue and the solutions. And he's a get-it-done type person, you know, very much in the mold of the president. And I think people appreciate that. I think people want that. They don't want this ambivalence. They want things to get done. And they don't expect that there's going to be 100% agreement with that person, just like with the president. But I think people admire in the president his get-it-done attitude and really getting things accomplished. And Ambassador Grenell is exactly like that.
Well, we might see Rob Whitman as Secretary of Defense in his second Trump term, right? Could happen.
Oh, John, I am focusing on having the honor to go back and represent folks in the first district, and I, as I tell folks, we'll see what happens from there. So.
You'll be a great Secretary of Defense, John Frederick's Radio Network. I'm for Rob Whitman for Secretary of Defense second term. Thanks for being with us, Congressman. Always good.
You're listening to the John Frederick Show. Common sense for the Commonwealth. Online anytime. Talk Radio, AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Gordon Griffin. Democrat Pete Buttigieg is ending his campaign for president. Three people with knowledge of Buttigieg's decision tell the Associated Press he is informing campaign staff they were not authorized to speak publicly and requested anonymity. His campaign says that Buttigieg will speak Sunday night in South Bend, Indiana. Buttigieg rose to the field top tier but failed to notch enough wins in the critical early states necessary to keep his bid moving forward. Preliminary research in Seattle suggests the new virus may have been circulating for weeks undetected in Washington state. It's a finding that could mean hundreds of undiagnosed cases. The state's also home to the nation's first confirmed infection and the first death. State and local authorities are stepping up testing for the coronavirus Sunday as a number of new cases grew nationwide, with new infections announced in California, Illinois, Rhode Island, and Washington state. More details at srnnews.com.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
My story begins with debt, a lot of debt, credit card debt, and I heard a commercial for Trinity. I gave them a call.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-758-5360.
When I first called, I was a little embarrassed and kind of ashamed, and I looked at the numbers, and I saw how quickly that astronomical debt that was in my life would go away.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
What I would tell other people, please pick up the phone and call Trinity. Just let them put together a program and see how affordable and easy it is to pay off your debt.
Call Trinity at 1-800-758-5360. That's 1-800-758-5360.
Internal Revenue Service. When you owe a personal or business tax debt and can't pay, just hearing those three words brings feelings of fear and anxiety. I'm Jonathan David Suryash, Managing Tax Attorney at J. David Tax Law. Everyone knows that if you owe the IRS and don't pay, it's only a matter of time before tax liens, wage garnishments, or bank levies happen to you. The first step to resolution is our no-cost consultation. We take the time to go through your specific tax problem step by step. We explain exactly what your options are and how we will resolve your tax issue. J. David Tax Law is a local firm right here in Jacksonville, where only an experienced tax attorney will represent you. Our fee payment plans are affordable for everyone. If you have tax problems, call us now for a no-cost consultation at 904-507-4777. That's 904-507-4777, or find us on the web at jdavidtaxlaw.com. That's jdavidtaxlaw.com. Peace of mind is only a click or phone call away.
Who's watching your home when you're not there? It could be a burglar. Burglars prefer to break in when they think no one is home, and no one will stop them. Don't be an easy target for intruders. Protect your home with a free security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Call now and get free hardware, free medical and fire alert, and free activation. It's an $850 value. Call right now and you'll also get six free sensors. That's 6 points of protection for free. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer, at 1-888-987-3232. You'll get 24-hour protection, and there's no cost for parts or activation. Call now about a free security system monitored by ADT. Call 1-888-987-3232. $99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement at $35.99 per month. Total package includes 6 door window sensors. Labor charges may apply. Call for terms and conditions to this offer and Protect Your Home license numbers. Call now, 1-888-987-3232.
They don't call him the commander of common sense for nothing.
I'm not a wholly owned subsidiary of the Republican National Committee, the Democrat National Committee, any campaign or anybody else. So I'm going to call it like I see it.
Guess who got out of the wrong side of the bed this morning?
Make sure to get your big boy pants on. No crybaby diapers.
There's no crying in baseball.
Here on the John Frederick Show.
Joining me now, Danny Barefoot, longtime Democratic consultant and operative nationally. He was also the consultant for the stunning Joe Morrissey primary trouncing of Roz Dance, where he got 72% in Petersburg. I love saying that because it's just so much fun to say. Joe Morrison got 72% in Petersburg and beat a 40-year incumbent, Rod Stantz, who was the mayor of Petersburg. Too much fun, right? And he's with us now. He's also an Elizabeth Warren supporter. Danny, great to have you, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, John. Good to be back.
All right, so Danny, like Saturday night, right? It's Bernie Sanders. I mean, he's winning everything. And a lot of people saying now his march to the nomination could be a first ballot victory. Danny, break this down for us.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, look, I don't think anybody in the party or anybody that was following this closely was surprised to see Bernie Sanders win in Nevada. But I think what was most surprising was just how resounding the victory was, you know. The kind of refrain and amongst the party people that I'm talking to as well, he has a small sort of chunk of supporters who can't grow that base. And, I mean, boy, did he grow it. I mean, he won with Latinos. He was competitive with African-Americans. He obviously won the folks that identify as liberal and very liberal, but he held his own with even conservative Democrats, you know, at least entrance and exit polls showed. You know, he was pulling even with Joe Biden. I mean, you know, in this very crowded field, he kind of got close to 50% of the vote. So, I think that this is a big win for Bernie, and I think that polls have shown him, like, sort of growing his support in South Carolina. He leads in a majority of Super Tuesday states. And I think, you know, some folks in the establishment are really in denial about how quickly this thing is closing up. You know, I hear a lot of people keep saying things like, well, you know, these are only the first three states, like, we still have 47 to go. And that's just not how primary politics work. It's a momentum game. It's a game about keeping donors in the arena. And, you know, I think that Biden has one more shot to keep his campaign alive this upcoming Saturday. But, I'm not sure there's much anybody's going to be able to do to stop Sanders at this point.
You're looking now at a potential Bernie Sanders first ballot victory. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm skeptical it goes to a contested convention at all. You know, I mean, I think that we will probably have a nominee going into convention, and I think that person is likely to be Bernie Sanders at this point.
All right, so let's get to the other candidates, because I agree with you. I predicted, as you know, Bernie Sanders 18 months ago, and here's why. Having been with the Trump campaign from the inception, planning to before escalator to winning on November 8th at 2:30 a.m., the campaign with the movement, the enthusiast in a crowded field wins. And that's what we saw in 2015 and 16. And remember, during the Trump campaign, they kept telling us the same thing. And we were laughing at it. Trump can't get over 25%. Trump can't get over 30%. Trump can't get over 35%. Trump will never get to 50%. And we had the movement. We had the people. We had the enthusiasm. And that's how it kept growing. And then, obviously, we eviscerated a 16-person field. And the other thing that we were willing to do that Bernie is, I think, his supporters, and I'm not saying the candidates, but the supporters, those that were with Trump at the beginning, like me, were absolutely 100% willing to burn the party to the ground because we hated the party. We hated them. So if the alternative was Trump or the party burns and there's a fiasco and it goes up in smoke and we have to start over, I was fine with that. A lot of other, that's kind of the same with the Bernie people, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I agree 100%. I mean, look, I think he is in some ways better positioned than Trump in the primary because there isn't, there's kind of the establishments against him. But, you know, Trump initially had some resistance from voters in the primary. You know, they came along after they saw him win, you know, but early polling was like, you know, 60% of the people in the party said they wouldn't be happy if Trump was nominated. And he started to grow that support by showing he could win. Bernie already starts out with, you know, I think it's upwards of 80% of the party says, you know, they'd be satisfied if he were the nominee. But yeah, I think, you know, there is a chunk of his supporters that are willing to, you know, burn the party to the ground, vote third party, you know, make threats. I think some of them are harassing folks online as well. So I think that he has a base of supporters that are willing to do absolutely anything to ensure that Bernie Sanders is the Democratic nominee.
Okay, so let's get to some of the other candidates. I thought Joe Biden's speech, Danny, on Saturday night was laughable, where he was claiming something like he had a good showing. He got 19%, Danny. 3 weeks ago, he was ahead of Nevada. How do you go from being ahead to getting 19%, getting beat by 30 points, and claiming victory? Like, how do you do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think Joe Biden was just riding on name recognition. And it's really disappointing for more establishment-minded folks like me. You know, I was warning against supporting Biden very early. You know, I mean, this is a guy who's lost two presidential races before this, both embarrassingly. I don't think has been an impressive candidate at any point. And, you know, I think that his campaign is largely responsible for Bernie Sanders' rise because he took up all of the establishment sort of donors and energy. And had he set out this race, I think all of that energy would have went to somebody like Kamala Harris, who probably could have ended up closing the deal. But he, you know, didn't organize on the ground in Nevada. He didn't properly plan for those first two losses and what that does to a campaign. I mean, look, in 2008, Hillary Clinton led Barack Obama by, I think, 30 points in South Carolina until Barack Obama showed he could win. And voters start to move when they see a winner. I think that his campaign has been an embarrassment so far. And I'll tell you, I talked to a couple of folks, you know, one pretty senior on his campaign just the other day. And one of the things that's surprising to me is they're a little delusional. I mean, they still are talking about, you know, just wait until black voters start to vote. Like, we're going to have a comeback. And I'm like, guys, your meet with black voters is down to single digits and you're getting blown out the water with every other demographic. Mm-hmm. That's not a recipe for success.
Wow. I think you're spot on. You're on the John Fredericks Radio Network, Trucking the Truth Across America. We're with Danny Barefoot. Danny is a longtime Democratic operative and consultant. Let's talk about Danny Barefoot's candidate, Elizabeth Warren. Boy, hot in the summer, got the lead in Iowa, was the talk of the town, and she has so far fizzled, except for her performance in Nevada, where I thought she surgically cut up Bloomberg like nothing I've ever seen. What's going on with the Warren campaign?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm supporting Warren, not even because I necessarily agree with sort of her politics or where she is in the party. I'm much more of an establishment-minded Democrat. But what I've just been impressed with her campaign. I thought, you know, her debate performance against Mike Bloomberg shows just how effective I think she would be on a debate stage against Trump. You know, I mean, Warren right now is saying she doesn't even think Donald Trump would probably debate her, and I think if she were the candidate, that may be true. She's just really great at this, but it hasn't made a difference. I mean, right, Democrats aren't paying attention to her, and I think that there are a bunch of reasons for that. I think one is, you know, even though most Democrats personally would be fine with a woman president, they kind of are worried about if their neighbor would be. They saw what happened to Hillary Clinton, and they're uncomfortable putting up a woman against Donald Trump. So I think that's the first thing. And then the second thing is the party tried to kneecap her when she started to have her surge early on. And I think they're going to come to regret that. You know, they saw her rising really quickly. They attacked her over Medicare for All. They attacked her over raising taxes on the wealthy. And the thought was they were kneecapping her for Joe Biden. And that wasn't what happened, right? It gave Bernie the oxygen to surge. So I don't know what her endgame is right now. You know, I think she has focused more heavily on the Super Tuesday states than a lot of the other candidates, so she's hoping for some kind of miracle there. And then in the absence of that, she'll have enough delegates to probably make up any deficit Bernie Sanders has. And my guess is she wouldn't hate being on a ticket with him. You know, I mean, Bernie is not going to be somebody, if he's the nominee, that tries to balance the ticket, in my opinion. That's not
a... Yeah, he can't do that. Not ideologically, but I was saying earlier, you know, if she has 300-400 delegates and he's got 1,500 and she can cobble together a coalition to put him over the top, why wouldn't she be the VP?
Yeah, and I mean, look, Bernie Sanders' theory of politics and sort of theory of how you win is that you don't make these compromises, right, these ideological balances of the ticket. He thinks you put forward your honest vision for the country, you sort of eschew this, like, you know, calculation in politics. And so I think he's going to want somebody who shares his politics, and that is not many people in the Democratic Party, at least not many elected officials. You know, he's got a small group to choose from. And I think Warren is the most prominent. She comes with the biggest base of support. So I think she'll be a front runner for his VP pick if he wants to nominate.
I agree. And certainly that's her motivation to stay in. Okay, I'm going to go to Virginia in a minute, but I've got to ask you about Mike Bloomberg. On Super Tuesday, you have to start to win states to be viable, right?
Yeah. Right.
Bloomberg, I believe, is going to win Virginia. Where does the Bloomberg candidacy go after Super Tuesday?
Dan? You know, I think that Bloomberg was, before the debate, was actually positioned to do quite well. I was even, you know, kind of considering if he would be somebody I'd support against Bernie Sanders, who I've kind of been horrified to watch rise in my party. But then his debate performance, I mean, 30 million people watched that debate, and it was embarrassing. And not just because Elizabeth Warren eviscerated him, but he was utterly unprepared for really obvious attacks on his record. And I, you know, some of the internal polling I've seen has shown him plummeting across Super Tuesday states. He is still strong in Virginia. I agree with you. He has a good shot of winning here. But look, Bloomberg is praying that Joe Biden wins in South Carolina. He has to have this field fractured. If Bernie Sanders pulls off another win, he will just wallop on Super Tuesday, and that will be the end of the ballgame. So I think Bloomberg's path is Joe Biden gets a win, maybe kind of a weak win in South Carolina. That keeps the field scrambled enough. He's been the only one in the air in these Super Tuesday states, and he hopes to kind of cobble together some delegates there. But Bloomberg is betting on a contested convention. He can't win this thing outright. Leaving your name off the first four of the ballot in the first four states just makes the delegate math so impossible. So my guess is he actually fades more quickly than I and most people originally thought.
Who wins South Carolina?
Man, you know, I guess I'd vote on Joe Biden, but that would be a shaky bet. He's going to get Clyburn's endorsement here on Wednesday, and Clyburn's, you know, prominent and important in that state. I do think Biden has focused his entire campaign on South Carolina, so I guess he probably ekes it out by a couple of points, but that's not a win, John. I mean, like, the deal is, if Joe Biden and probably his best state in the entire country, other than Delaware, the state he spent the most time in, the state that he has the most support, and if all you can do is cobble together a couple point win that probably doesn't net him any delegates over Bernie Sanders because of the way they're proportionally allocated, that's not a win. I mean, right, he still has a ton of states he's going to lose in on Super Tuesday.
I agree with you 100%. I think if he wins by three, it's a defeat. And I think Bernie can win. Who knows? All right,
yeah,
let's shift over Danny Barefoot to Virginia, and let's talk about redistricting reform. There was editorials blasting the Democrats Sunday in the Richmond Times-Dispatch and the Virginian Pilot, two big papers here in Virginia. Danny, you're a Democrat. The Democrats campaigned on redistricting reform. And they did that, Danny Barefoot, in the populist wave we're in right now. Bernie, Trump, what the hell is Speaker Eileen Filler-Corn doing? Danny, she's holding it up. It passed the Senate again 38-2. Last time the amendment passed 39-1. Passed 38-2. She's got the votes in the House. She's got the votes in the Privilege and Elections Committee. Is this just her, like, Mitch McConnell paradox here? I mean, what is Filler-Corn doing? Why can't we get this out of committee?
Yeah, so, well, I'll tell you what I think her thinking is, and I'll tell you where I think they should go. Look, I think that from the folks I've talked to that kind of, you know, are networked in and understand her thinking, is they are sort of the opinion that, you know, when Republicans win, whether it's in Virginia or other places, they aren't going to push fair redistricting. So it sort of sucks that Virginia Democrats have total control. They're going to, you know, the notion that they would put together fair maps while other states that are under complete Republican control would maximize their representation in Congress isn't sort of fair. I've been an advocate of, I think states should actually pair together in a sort of buddy program where it's like, hey, you Republican-controlled state, we'll end our gerrymandering if this Democratic-controlled one does. But here's the reality. They should push this out of committee, and here's why. Like, parties are bad at gerrymandering for their own advantage anyway. Republicans tried to gerrymander the House. Even without the court intervening, they would have lost the House. this last cycle. Democrats tried to gerrymander it for the state Senate. They lost the state Senate after gerrymandering it. I think that this is a good bill. It's a compromise bill. I understand there are some concerns from some folks that Republicans will act in bad faith and deadlock the commission and send it to the Supreme Court that's been appointed, majority appointed by Republicans. But the reality is the court isn't going to be so partisan as to put forward a kind of shameless gerrymander anyway. So I really don't know where she's going to go on this. I wouldn't be surprised to see her fold, but I also wouldn't be surprised to see her run down the clock, right? I mean, if they don't move it out of committee, that's the end of the ball game, right? As soon as the session's over, then they will gerrymander it. But I think there are going to be a lot of folks that are disappointed. Look, Virginia has had a session that Democrats are really very happy about. I mean, there are a couple of things folks are nitpicking at, but, you know, by and large, progressives are just thrilled. And, you know, I'm hearing from people that are going to be unhappy if they fail in this big way. It was a key part of our campaigning, and not just this cycle. We've been campaigning on redistricting reform for a decade, since Republicans gerrymandered it last. So I think she's going to have some explaining to do if she kills this bill.
It's just the height of hypocrisy. And, look, Eileen Filler Corn, I'm not a fan of Caucus of the Corn, but you're right. They have moved progressive legislation at a breathneck pace. They should be applauded for that. That's what they campaigned on. That's what they have a right to do. And when my Republican friends call in and whine about it, I'm like, you lost the majority. They're doing exactly what they said they were going to do. You shouldn't be shocked, and you can't stop them. On this redistricting, they campaigned on it. They promised they would do it. And as far as other states, here's the deal. Other states don't have Brian Cannon. Maybe they should hire him, and their organization should go in there. Cannon, who's the executive director of One Virginia 21, has worked on this tirelessly for a five-year period. That's why he's gotten to where it is. Other states don't have his organization in there. Maybe they should try to do that. But I'm not interested in North Carolina or Pennsylvania. I'm interested in Virginia. And the thing that the height of hypocrisy here is when the Republicans were in control, they backed this thing 100%. They backed it. And if they were still in control now, I would be holding them as accountable. These are one of those things where you have to show leadership. And Filler Corn is a history of kumbaya, bang the drum, get everybody around her, have 18,000 meetings to have a consensus. At some point, as Speaker, Danny, you have got to lead. And the leadership is, I'm going to get this out of committee, I'm going to take it to the floor, and we'll let the chips fall where they may. That's what leadership is. And I think that Filler Corn needs to do that. The other alternative is they get it out of committee, but then they need a two-thirds vote on the floor. I'm not sure they have two-thirds. They have a majority. Might be 63. It's not 67. But I don't know how Filler Corn sits there as the speaker leading her party and just lets this thing die in committee because Joe Lindsay is opposed to it. And she's got 65 votes in the House and 38 in the Senate. Danny, how do you do that?
Yeah, well, I mean, let me just say, I don't think that this is her wanting this bill to pass and a failure of leadership. I think what is actually going on here, to be completely honest with you, is she wants to gerrymander, right? Like, she wants this to fail so the House and Senate get to decide what the district look like. They think that they can. They think that they have a huge opportunity to protect Bamberger, particularly if she wins. And if she wins in 2020, her seat will be a Democratic dream after that. So this isn't Eileen sort of failing to lead on something she cares about. It's her trying to figure out how she can kill this with the least amount of blowback.
Then she's a hypocrite. If she's doing it to let it die so she can do the opposite of what they said when they were running in the campaign and what they said in 2019, then she's a hypocrite. So she's either not leading, she's a hypocrite, or she's a liar. Any three of those are bad. What she needs to do is get it out of committee and do the right thing.
Right. No, look, I agree with you, John. Like, I mean, look, it's hard. I mean, look, as a Democrat, I will tell you, like, I find it very tempting to say, let's kill this and let's gerrymander.
right? Like, we had to win under gerrymandered maps the last time. I'm looking at politics nationally. It's really frustrating. I will say, I think that there are not just Virginia Republicans, but some folks on my side that feel like, you know, when Republicans have a chance to use the system to the sort of fullest effect, they do so. So I get the temptation. But I think that if we don't lead on this, no one ever will, right? If you want to do redistricting reform, at some point, the party in power has to decide that they're going to give up some of the power. And I think that that's hard. I think that it's tough. I understand the temptations. But, like, your leadership is about taking acts that are tough, that do give up some of the advantage for your party. So I hope he sees the light on this. And I think Brian is running probably the smartest state-based group on redistricting reform that I've seen all across the country. If this bill passes, it will be 100% to their credit. I mean, they have turned opponents into allies. Like, I mean, I've been shocked to see Dick Sadwall and George Barker's kind of come to Jesus moment on this stuff, and I don't think any of that would have happened without Brian.
Okay. Danny Barefoot, you're spot on. This is Eileen's call at the end of the day. You're elected speaker. You have to lead. You have a position not only in your party, but in the Commonwealth. And I implore Eileen Filler-Corn to show leadership, do the right thing, get this out of committee, and let the House vote on a bill that passed 38-2 and 39-1 in the Senate, and last time passed in the House 87-13. Sometimes, Danny, you just have to lead. Leadership is not always easy, but she aspired to that job. I want to support her in that job. You got to lead, and you got to do the right thing. That's what leadership is. That's what the speaker should do. Danny Barefoot, we're out of time. Always great to have you on. Hey, by the way, congratulations on a great Joe Morrissey victory, 72% in Petersburg. Put that on your resume. It's very long right now. John Fredericks, Radio Network.
February 29th, 2008. Today is Leap Day, which adds one additional day to the calendar year. The extra calendar day is added every 4 years and has been since 46 BC. On this day in 1940, Gone with the Wind wins 8 Oscars, including Best Picture, at the Academy Awards ceremony in Los Angeles. 1960, the first Playboy Club, featuring waitresses clad in bunny outfits, opens in Chicago. 1904, band leader Jimmy Dorsey is born in Shenandoah, Pennsylvania. Also born on this day, rapper Ja Rule and actors James Mitchell and Dennis Farina. Today in history, February 29th, John Belmont, The Associated Press. Senorita, stay.
I got this feeling inside my bones. It goes electric, wavy when I turn it on. Off from my city, off from my home. We're flying up, no ceiling when we in our zone. I got that sunshine in my pocket, got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops. Ooh, I can't take my eyes off of it, moving so phenomenally. You're more like the way we rock it, so don't stop. And under the lights when everything goes, nowhere to hide when I'm getting you close. Just imagine. Nothing I can see but you when you